issue you with respect to the water keeper, what's the organization like? Mm-hmm. I'll probably comment on it as I move forward. But I thought that it might be valuable to run through these slides, this PowerPoint. It will give you an idea of the issues that I deal with mm-hmm. in Great Bay and the Piscataqua River. And I also have some slides which are germane to the Penobscot. I split my time. I actually live in Lewiston, Maine. I live in Lewiston, Maine. I'm there 3 days a week. Otherwise, I'm on the New Hampshire seacoast. I stay with a friend, and I'm down there the rest of the time. But I live in Lewiston. I've lived in Maine most of my life. I've been a selectman for many years, which has been very helpful in building relationships with individual towns. Worked in the woods most of my life. But I think because I was a fly fisherman from a young age, I ended up being a clean water advocate because you have to. So, this is my watershed. Great Bay, mm-hmm. and the Piscataqua River is small. It's only 6,000 acres. It's small. And it's fed by 7 significant rivers. And it has a watershed of a little over 1,000 square miles. And the reason that, 10 towns are in Maine, 42 mm-hmm. are in New Hampshire, on this side of the Salmon Falls. Here's Portsmouth here, Shipyard, York, Kittery, right up here into the Elliott and Berwick's. So we do have a fairly large population, 400,000 in this area. So obviously what happens way up here on the south side of Sanford in terms of water quality in mm-hmm. the watershed ultimately affects the water quality down here. The whole idea of watersheds is lost on a lot of people. They don't comprehend what a watershed is, believe it or not, but that's why this slide is in here. My area attracts a lot of money because it is an estuary of national significance. There's only 24 in the United States. Now, I compare that to you guys. There's the watershed of the Penobscot River. Your watershed is 8,600 square miles. Mm-hmm. So it's 8.5 times almost what my watershed is. And I would guess that your population in this watershed is probably, depending on the season, it's probably 2 to 250,000. That's what I estimate. And that's rough. I didn't look at every major city. But when you put them all together, starting right down here, and you go up, you're looking at 200, 250,000 people. So there's a big difference in terms of geography here. Mm. At the basis of our ecosystem, our estuary, the foundation is eelgrass. It's more important to us than a lot of other areas up and down the coast because it is where everything lives. And Great Bay is fairly shallow. And unless you're in the main channel of the estuary, you might only have, a foot or two of water. It's very shallow. Okay? But eelgrass is imperative for producing oxygen, shelter, and especially anchoring sediment. Go ahead.
It's very, very dense. It's not patchy. It's more like meadows. Well,
it used to be dense. This is eelgrass. That's a fairly good picture of eelgrass that ranges probably, this high. Moves back and forth in the water with the tides and all of that. But here's a place that was completely covered with eelgrass, but it's patchy now because it's being smothered by seaweed, nuisance weeds, algae, and so we're losing the biomass dramatically.
So this is preventing growth of fresh sprouts?
Right. Yes. It flowers, seed is deposited, and grows. So we're losing that, and so we're losing the ability for it to produce oxygen, but more importantly, to anchor sediment. Because just remember, I told you everything was really shallow. Here's a picture. It's not a poor picture. It's a picture of turbidity in the water, affecting photosynthesis, and so it further exacerbates the loss of eelgrass. The whole loss of eelgrass has been at the heart of all the confrontation and all of the lawsuits which have occurred in our area over whose fault it is, and I'll get to whose fault in a minute. So we're seeing this downward trend. Here's a median downward trend of eelgrass. You know, it runs out just about now. And we are losing it at a huge amount. And I'm going to come back to how much in a minute. This is a downward trend of finfish. Every year, New Hampshire Fish and Game puts out seine nets. Mm-hmm. Same places, same time, every season. And then they simply count everything by species that's in there. We've got a downward trend in the number of fish that are actually in the bay because the connection is probably there's a loss of habitat. Mm-hmm. So these are all just
that's pretty nasty
indicators. For any bird watcher, this is a brant. It's a basically a stocky Canadian goose. Okay, and we used to have large numbers of these in Great Bay. Great Bay was noted as a wing shooting place. Lots of shallow ground. Birds could feed, but when we've started to lose this eelgrass, the flocks of brants that we had have disappeared. And they've disappeared because brants, 99% of their diet is eelgrass. So, oysters. Even if you don't like them, you're going to love them. You know, oysters, each individual oyster can filter 20 to 50 gallons a day. It's a huge amount of water. Huge. You know, a 50-gallon drum of water, each oyster can filter that every day. They're going to take out the nutrients. They're going to lock up the nitrogen. This is a culch, C-L-U-T-C-H. It's basically an oyster reef, and you can see that what's occurring here is it's a great deal of siltation. So go back to what I said about eelgrass. If the eelgrass is gone, it no longer anchors the sediment. The bay is shallow. The sediment is in suspension because of severe tides, wind, wave, action. It puts the sediment into suspension. It snuffs out basically the few existing oyster reefs, natural ones that we had. This is just an aside, another organization that I volunteer with. We've been recycling oyster shells for 5 years. We actually pick them up at all of the area restaurants every week. And we work with the Nature Conservancy. We get this shell after it's dried, and that's what it's doing in this picture. We get the shell back into the bay to create new reefs that are seeded down with live oysters in order to offset some of the loss.
So you're like you're preceding the culch?
We're preceding it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I know Chesapeake Bay, they were...
We buy spat out of Damascotta. Okay. And the Jackson Estuarine Lab at UNH grows them out on some of this oyster shell that's in these bags, and then that gets put on top of the substrate that we create by putting these shells back into the
bags. Okay, you put like the live shells, you might as well call them, on top of that then.
Yeah, the live ones go on top. We got to get them up off the mud.
This is what Grimmel helped contributed.
Grimmel actually did. That money that we broke it, that the EPA did assess Grimmel is supplemental environmental project, and that money, without admitting any wrongdoing, basically went to the Nature Conservancy, whatever the amount was, X amount of acres were created. Yeah. So... If I only had one slide to show, this is it. This is Great Bay. The bottom, Little Bay, Piscataqua. Portsmouth is right here. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is the 95 bridge that everyone goes over. And though I don't have the mouth of the river on this slide, what I want you to note are these green cross-hatched areas up either side of the Piscataqua River, up here, down the other side, all through Royal Cove, Little Bay, all of this down here. And then, obviously, down here in Great Bay itself. This is eelgrass, which is gone. since 1996. So less than 20 years, we've lost 1,200 acres of the 2,600 acres that we had.
And some of it is just entirely wipeouts then on the little bay then.
Well, there is no eelgrass effectively from this point, Adams Point, all the way out until you get all the way down the mouth of the river down here at Fort Foster and Kittery and Newcastle. And there, because the flushing is significant from the ocean itself, the water is effectively cleaner, less turbidity, and the eelgrass at the mouth, though there's only like 275 acres down there, you know, is hanging on.
What is that little cove just past 95? On the right
this
above?
Right here.
Because it looks like it's got the grass.
It does have some. The flow is, I can't think of the name right at the moment, Spinney Creek. It is an impoundment. There is an oyster aquaculture operation in here, and it's connected to the main stem right here by just a culvert. It does not experience free flow.
Just a culvert, you say?
Yeah, just a 4-foot culvert connects it. So the light green down here is eelgrass, but in most cases it's reduced in biomass. And some of the work I do is some ground truthing on the eelgrass to determine in a square meter how much is left of the original. You know, if you were
to
pull up
that photographically, or are you going sampling?
Sampling. If you were to pull up that eelgrass, it's going to weigh X. Next year, it may weigh X minus.
Oh, I see. Just because, doing meter squares or something?
Yes, because we're losing it in not only in distribution, but we're losing it in how thick it is. A lot of the eelgrass now is a lot thinner than it used to be and not as tall. So all the eelgrass that we effectively have in the system is down here in Great Bay, and it's under duress. I want you to take a look at the yellow, just the yellow. All the yellow represents oyster beds in 1993, and they add to 1,100 acres. 1,100 acres of oysters in Great Bay, and all that's left is the red.
Those little bits there?
This is what's left. Up in the Oyster River, up in the Oyster River, up in the Bellamy, over here in the main stem. And these oysters represent around, actually this year, they're down to about 80 acres. So we've lost 1,000 plus acres of oysters in just 20 years. And, you know, they're not all related to nutrient issues, which I'm going to get to in a minute here. It is siltation, which is indirectly related to the loss of eelgrass. And we do have two diseases that had showed up in the 90s that affected oysters. And
Dermo and MSX.
And overharvest. The overharvest has been fixed in a couple of ways. What you could take recreational, and it always was only recreational, has been cut way down. But the two diseases didn't kill everything. And the reefs that are being created, which are these square areas here, this is where that shell went. All of these square areas. This was the one that Grimmel paid for up here. Those are the sites where new reefs have been created by the program that I was talking about.
The cult and then the live shell on top.
Correct. Yep.